Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML That's Podcast. Cool. I am your host, Joe. Aki can't shut the fuck up. But Chris is here. Pernell's here. Tim is here. How is everybody doing?
Pretty good.
When did Tim show up?
Really? I've been here.
I didn't hear him say anything. I remember he was like, Tim isn't here yet, but then I don't remember you saying anything.
So anyway, Chris brought his partner with him today to hang out. Catherine, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing good.
Welcome to the show. It's been a while since you've been on. How's things?
Things are good. I just applied to UT Austin's PhD program for information studies.
Ooh.
And that's what's going on.
That's a good thing to be going on.
I'm incredibly nervous. I really hope that I get selected for the program. Just so, if only so I can make one of my older sisters specifically call me doctor.
She's a real doctor.
Well, when I was 12, she told me that she was smarter than me because she had more education than I had. And so I've been working to fix that. Make her call me doctor.
That is nothing. The most petty thing I've heard in a long time, and I love it so, so much.
Nobody's petty. Sisters are petty.
Nothing is a greater motivator than pure spite.
I know.
You're damn right. It's what gets things done.
That is fantastic. Oh, yeah. Drew Van Camp, 10 out of 10 villain origin story.
Imagine getting valedictorian that year, too. And it's like, you get to give the speech or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, people always ask me, what is your driving force? And I have to say, she's sitting in the front row. Come up on stage.
Oh, I would never let her share my spotlight.
Oh, no, the spotlight would be her coming up on stage to call you doctor in front of everybody. Yeah. That would be golden. But also, it'll be like the ultimate end of the petty ship. It's like, you know, yeah, I'm ready to hear it from you.
Nah, you got to drag that out. You can't just get over it.
No, I would want it to play out at like a family gathering where she says like, oh, hey, sister. And I'm like, I believe you mean doctor sister.
Doctor sister. Sounds like a TV show.
That would be like a great follow-up.
She's a doctor. She's like, also family. How do they reconcile this? Find out on Doctor Sister.
But also not that kind of doctor.
Like, don't get sick in front of me. I can't help you.
Oh my god, I like it. I would watch this show. Just going to point that out. I just want you to know I would watch this show. So we need to get it. We need to get someone to take care of it. We need somebody on the horn. Tim can do it. They can. X-Drive can publish Tim. Set this show up.
In a couple of years, assuming I get into the program, Chris can tape it when it happens. When I make my sister call me doctor.
Literally, and then I'm gonna use a VHS camera.
Yes, I was just gonna say that has to happen. Like the big bulky one that takes the full VHS too, and not the mini.
Has like a little boom mic sticking out of it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
The old school.
Play it on the family VCR when we get home.
We have two VCRs.
It's true.
You really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Why?
They're cheap. Because we still got videotapes.
They're hard to find. So whenever I saw one recently when I was thrifting and I looked at it and it was like $17 and I just scooped it on up.
It's kind of funny because the one that she got is a combo VHS and DVD recorder. And I'm like, ooh, I could back up my VHS tapes on an even more obsolete format. Because nobody uses DVD-Rs anymore.
Not with that attitude.
Not with that attitude.
I mean, I would use a DVD-R before a VCR.
True, but what, you know what?
The ones built into the TV are it's not that they're worse. It's that they're more difficult to repair when they inevitably break.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, because you have the 40-pound TV sitting on top of the VCR.
Oh, I wish my big TV was only 40 pounds.
Only.
Yeah, I can't. The reason that I was so inclined to buy a second VCR was because I was moving the CRT and Chris's VCR fell off of it and the faceplate fell off. And I've been feeling bad about that for like years.
You can stop. I absolve you.
Yeah. Chris didn't even care. He's like, it still works.
Yeah. Just it's a VCR. What are you going to do to it?
True. I don't even know if I have any VHS tapes. I did have the VH version of Salival by Tool, which was a CD and a VHS combo. Or if you were really cool at the time, you bought the DVD version. But I sold that a while ago. I don't know if I have anything else on VHS.
I have no idea who owned it originally, but somehow a copy of Queenstrike Mindcrime 2 came into my possession on VHS, and I watched it like all of once as a 20-something or something. I was like, oh, not into Queenstrike.
Oh, Tim, you might like this. I might have one VHS tape left.
Oh, God.
The original DX VHS.
Oh, that. Okay. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, like, you somehow had possession of one of, like, the River City Rumble VHSs that I sent around.
No, no.
Or something way worse that was in the hands of Eric Ruth for way too long.
I'll tell you one thing I have on VHS that I think is cool is the motivational tape for children starring Mr. T called Be Somebody or Be Somebody's Fool.
Hmm.
It's where they get that one music video that always goes around on Mother's Day about where Mr. T is rapping about his mother. I'm not even joking. It's a rap song he does about his mother and how you have to treat your mother right, but he specifically means his
mother. I've heard that.
Yeah, it's great.
I
remember that song.
Not the lyrics maybe, but like it was arranged by Ice-T. So it's not, Mr. T is not a rapper, but it's closer than you think to like a legit song.
Well, you said someone else took care of the lyrics, right?
Yeah,
so he just had to voice them. So if you get someone that does the lyrical part, I mean, he totally sounds like a rapper. He just needs someone to give him good lyrics, and they did.
He got a good DMX voice to him.
Yeah, like a paid fool who don't get on my nerves. You know, like he could totally do that. He just needs someone to hit him with some good lyrics. His voice will do the work after that. So
I used to have pretty much all the songs memorized. Yeah, and it's I don't know. It's something that like I came into through the internet. So it's not like this is a childhood VHS of mine, but I have been watching it a lot in like the last 20 years. So it's nice. It costs $1 on eBay. I think it probably still does. Yeah.
Oh, you want our check now? Apparently, like a Mr. T resurgence or something.
I mean, maybe.
Mr.
Well, weekends ago, I did pick up a few VHS tapes, and one of them was Romancing the Stone.
I know. Oh,
it's up to $10 now.
I did love Romancing the Stone.
It's $10 or best offer.
Jewel Denial, too.
I'm actually amazed that people are like out grabbing VHS tapes. Like, I ended up having a moment years ago when I was like one of the rare moments in my life where like I needed to declutter. And I took every VHS tape I had, it was boxes of them, and loaded it into my car and drove to Baltimore to a specific pawn shop where the guy's like, I'll give you $200 for all your VHS tapes. We're probably going to just put them in a dumpster, but if I can sell them, so be it. And I was like, $200, give me. It was all my Ranma, all like pretty much all my anime stuff, a bunch of movies I had, the works.
But then VHS anime was worth a lot.
That's probably worth something.
Well, the thing is, back then we were transitioning to DVDs, so everybody was like talking about like it was the new hotness. Like even the Viz crap with their terrible, like it's like, okay, now we're going from VHS with two episodes per tape. We're getting DVDs, three episodes per disc. You could buy them all over again. Yeah. Like fuck you guys. But people were just kind of like jumping straight to DVD, myself included, admittedly, and as a result, the VHS value just kind of plummeted at that point. The moment it was a DVD version, they just dropped.
Ever since I learned how much Rule of Rose costs. I don't sell anything that I own anymore.
Don't remind me. Rule of Rose is my freaking forever failed. Like, that was like, you know, I'll wait till it goes down in price like every other game I buy does.
You and Catherine will get along fine then.
Who?
You and Catherine, the person you're talking to.
You bought it. Did you buy it secondhand?
I bought it for $5 from the GameStop PS2 bin when I was working in, like, 2010?
How will we get along then? She succeeded.
And then I had it with me, like, through couple of moves. And then one day I was like, you know, I have too much stuff. I'm going to sell all of my stuff. And
kindred spirit. Oh, I'm so sorry.
See, the only thing I have is a first edition Disney VHS, and I don't even know which one it is anymore.
You know, I'm like, you got to have some collectible game in your house or something, like game that went up in value.
Well, games, yes, but not VHSs, and I don't have much in the way of games either.
My final foray into selling, like, bulk selling stuff was 4 years ago when I moved to Japan for a year. I went through all of my stuff because I don't want Chris to have to keep it for a year while I'm out of the country.
But he loves you.
Which, by the way, I was like, it's fine.
He'll keep it.
Just to say, I did not instigate this behavior.
He did not. And I was like, no, I need to sell all my stuff. And among all of my stuff was the complete collection of the 2011 Darkwing Duck and DuckTales Boom comic run.
Oh, wow.
Dangerous
in the wrong way.
I had a weekly pull at my comic shop when I lived in New Orleans. And then, like, I just now, as of, like, a couple weeks ago, repurchased all of those comics.
How many volumes are we talking here?
Well, there's only 18 issues in the Darkwing Duck 2010-2011 Boom Comics run, and then there's 6 issues of the DuckTales run.
That must have cost a small fortune.
She's like, we don't talk about Bruno or the cost of those comics.
Okay, only like one of the comics was $100, and the rest of them were like...
Hey, I get it. I totally get it. When nostalgia strikes, the wallet burns, and that's totally fine. It's totally fine.
I love Darkwing Duck. I'm playing a cyberpunk tabletop game right now, and I'm building a character based off of Gizmo Duck / Fenton.
Would you say he's your favorite of the Disney afternoon collections? Like all the different cartoons?
Oh, Darkwing Duck? Fuck yes. Yeah. Like 100%.
Yeah.
500 million, all of the percentages.
Yeah, he definitely does belong up there. I have a soft spot for Tailspin myself for some reason.
Tailspin was my second, was like my close second, because my dad was a very fat man, and I loved the Jungle Book, and so it's still Baloo the bear, and my dad would play pretend as Baloo with me.
No, dear. Bare necessities.
I'm looking at this Darkwing Duck DuckTales Dangerous Currency paperback. $260.
Oof. Well, nice. That's because they came out with like a trade paperback of the final story. And I don't have those. I have the single issues.
Okay, I realize.
So I have Dangerous Currency 1, 2, 3, and 4. But I don't have the Dangerous Currency 1 and 2 combo or the 3 and 4 combo because I feel like that's unnecessary. But I am trying to get all of the variants.
I gotta catch myself before I get left with Tailspin. Like, my favorite was Tailspin, but my second favorite was Gargoyles, and that's where I stick. And
Gargoyles
then
is pretty good.
Gargoyles was fantastic.
Yeah, that was.
Gargoyles was great, but it was too old for me. When Disney Afternoon was around,
like that as in like maturity show, levels that, or that just was... like,
yeah, it was like, no, I mean like it was geared towards an older audience than I was.
That's what I meant.
Like, I just had a crush on the gargoyle lady.
Oh, Demona. Demona was awesome, was but also bad guy very conflicted. Yeah,
yeah, she was fantastic. I loved her.
Just a thing like that cartoon, like Catherine mentioned how like it was like an older demographic, and in a lot of ways, that's partly why I liked it, because I watched it early teens. We're talking maybe like 12 or 13, and it was one of those cartoons that as he took kids, like Batman animated series, as he respected kids' intelligence. Like, you know, we can have complicated characters and complicated relationships here, and you can appreciate
complicated life. I didn't need.
I don't need these gargoyles that turned a stone door in the deck. They should just be one form and stick with it. This is ridiculous.
I couldn't tell you anything about the story of Gargoyles, because I think I was probably too young for it at the time too. I just had a crush on that character, so I watched it.
You were too young to understand the show, but you weren't too young to get the hots for Demona.
They hit things. That, as far as I was concerned, they beat up bad guys. That was it. That's all I understood.
But then Demona's like, grrr.
Exactly.
That's hilarious.
I was more like Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, Tailspin. I love the shit out of the Rescue Rangers.
Yeah,
Gadget. I wanted to be Gadget when I grew up.
Did you see the movie? The new movie they did?
I did. Oh my God.
So good.
It's really good.
I have to watch it.
You just treat it like Roger Rabbit and it's fun.
I will. How about this? I will watch it tonight for you.
Do it.
It is very Roger Rabbit. Like,
very fun.
If I can find it anyway.
Disney Plus.
It's on.
No.
He's like, I'll find it in my own way.
Exactly. That is exactly.
We go sailing the high seas tonight.
Time to go find the One Piece.
It's definitely not on there.
But yeah, gonna download it during the fucking show.
No, I don't. Why download. Not? I only stream, because downloading's illegal. Streaming is a gray zone.
Yes, I hear you on that one.
Is it just called Rescue Rangers? Is that just?
I think it was just called Rescue Rangers.
And it was made this year?
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Oh, God, was it this year?
Yeah. Time is
Years has this year been?
About five.
Way too many.
All right, I now have it, and there we go. There we are. Okay. I will watch it the moment I'm done with my review.
Oh, and just throwing this out there, but if there's anybody who's looking for a short horror read... there is this book called Man Fuck This House.
Okay, then that sells good me title. Right there. It's that's what I would say if a house is too haunted for much. Yeah, fuck this house. I'm out of here. I'm done.
Period. I try very hard not to judge books immediately based on their title, but I bought that so quickly. It's good too.
That's why I own Go the Fuck to Sleep.
Yeah. I heard that's a legit good thing, though.
Yeah.
What, when children go the fuck to sleep? Yes, that's always a good thing.
No, the Samuel L. Jackson, storybook or whatever.
Well, I mean, Catherine's telling us that Man Fuck This House is a legitimately good book in its own right, too. I mean...
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't arguing that. No,
speaking of horror...
We're just talking about judging books by the cover, which I do all the time.
Yeah.
And honestly, speaking from a sales perspective, books are supposed to be judged by their cover. That's why they have covers.
Yeah.
There you go.
And that's why I didn't buy Stephen King's Fairy Tale, but someone told me I need to change my tune and give it a try.
But if that was true that you were supposed to judge it by the cover, then why are so many covers just the title and fucking nothing else?
People
are cheap and don't want to pay a graphic designer?
That is true.
That it's been like that throughout a lot of history.
Also, a lot of books will be like, they're just selling it based off of the author, or if it's a topical book, well, the topic sells it.
Anyway, speaking of horror, that could be a good segue into reviews. I was trying to get to that. Like, I tried bringing it up, and Pernell just keeps going and go.
Hey, I stopped. I was on board with it. I got it.
I'm just glad it's not me.
So yeah, is everyone ready for review? Should we dive into these? We got a couple to get through.
Sure. Everyone ready?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Cool. First game to talk about tonight is the Dark Pictures Anthology, The Devil in Me, developed by Supermassive Games, published by Bandai Namco, released November 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. A group of documentary filmmakers receive a mysterious call inviting them to a modern-day replica of serial killer H.H. Holmes' Murder Castle. It's an opportunity that is too good to pass up and could be just the thing they're looking for to win some much-needed public interest. The creepy hotel is a perfect set for their new episode, but things are not quite as they seem. The crew discover they are being watched and even manipulated, and suddenly there's much more at stake than just their ratings. Purnell, what is going on in The Devil in Me?
One general thought I want to make before I go into this in full is that this week I had a couple of games I had to review. And throughout the lot, but going into it, I was like, man, I really want to be playing Pokemon Scarlet right now in all of its glitchy glory. So my review scale for this episode is primarily going to be, do I want to play this more than Pokemon Scarlet? And then I'll do the normal. I have to preface that because it adds extra value to, in my opinion anyway, to my reviews this week. Anyway, The Devil in Me is a game that is a part of the Dark Pictures Anthology. If I'm not mistaken, is the final game in season one of said anthology. And I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about this game going in one, because despite having Man of Medan recommended to me in the past, I have never played any of those games, though I have played previous Supermassive game Until Dawn, and I did enjoy that. But going into this one, I didn't know what to expect out of it. And what ends up happening is it plays similarly to that game, but with a new story, which in its own right isn't such a big deal. I'm okay with that. But the idea here is that there are five main characters that you work with. They're all members of the crew of the TV group that Joe mentioned in his header. And each one of those characters has a specific function that is unique to them. Aside from the usual, oh, God damn it. Aside from the other,
I was late.
aside from the other normal exploration mechanics. So, for example, the character of Jamie, she is able to fix fuse boxes using her multimeter. And there's another character named Aaron who gets a sound mic that she can use to listen for sounds in various directions while she's walking around the house. I'm going to get this part out of the way immediately. I felt that most of those different mechanics were fairly underutilized throughout the game, including much of the inventory system, which I originally hoped would have more going for it than it actually ended up having by the end of the game. It was usually like you have your generic item that you can use to light spaces, and then like maybe an item that you're going to use fairly soon, such as like a key to a room or something. Now, you have those things, and as you walk around the different chapters to explore, you'll control the character to walk from point A to point B. Sometimes you might find objects on the ground you can pick up and investigate, you know, the usual files that give you more, you know, exposition on the narrative, what's going on, the characters you meet, and the characters you actually don't meet. They sometimes come across coins on the ground, which you can use to collect to purchase like collectibles after the game, or even just in between like plays of the game. And aside from that, you'll be doing a few other actions, which I'll talk about in a second, because I want to go into this by telling you that it might sound like I'm being a downer on the game already. And if I reviewed this game as I was on Saturday night, I would have been doing a downer service on this game. However, something happened on Sunday. I started the game up where I was, got one chapter further into the game, and then 10 hours went by. That was it. I played the entire game pretty much in one sitting.
Wow.
Because I was engaged somehow. Next thing I know, it was like 1 a.m. I was like, how the hell did I get here?
I was engaged somehow. Because it's a good game, maybe? Or it's a compelling game, at least.
No, that's the thing.
For some reason, I kept playing.
I swear.
Yeah, you guys witchcraft. Say that, but typically I can play a game that I like and put it down. But I guess it's it was the compelling element. Yeah, not just that it was good, it was actually compelling, too. I wanted these characters that I originally thought were terrible to actually come out of it in one piece. And I started to appreciate them more as they were dealing with their plight, because what I felt the game did was it kind of peeled the layers off of them more or less in certain ways as they were placed in dire straits. And it was less about, you know, posing as something like, you know, the stoic presenter who's looking for a next career move or whatever. Now she's concerned about her friends and people that she, up until this point, were just kind of giving the cold shoulder because she had to keep up an appearance. Now she's like, no, I'm concerned. I hope you're okay. And whatever. But a lot of it also stemmed from the fact that when you were in situations where you were being, you know, hounded by the killer or killers or whatever, you felt that sense of stress of like, okay, it's time to hide. Something's happening. The game might say, you got to hide. And you hear the killers coming, and you basically have to look for a place to hide, run to it, and then hit the button, and then hold the button down until the killers go away. Sometimes you might have to do a prompt that has you kind of maintaining your heart rate. So a line will go by, similar to like certain music games where once the bar crosses over an indicator, you have to press A just to kind of like boop, 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 boop. I'd never lost that game because that one was pretty easy. But nonetheless, if some people were in a stress situation, they might kind of lose that sort of focus that makes that otherwise an easy thing and screw it up. But I'll tell you what's not easy somehow for me. There are QTEs in this game, quick time events, the bane of my existence. Some games they're easy, some games they're not. And in this case, they can be tough. Basically what happens is you'll be running from something or trying to dodge something, and a button prop will come up. And if you try to come back to it, they change the button. So you can't just remember the button order that you have to press. And then when it happens, you got to nail it. And if you don't, you might regret it. Sometimes I've had a couple moments where I was like, oh crap, I screwed up. And the game was like, yeah, this one was a gimme, but don't screw this one up. I'm like, okay, thank you. Thanks for the reprieve. So I was kind of thankful for that. But it gets a little tense sometimes when you're being chased around. It's like, hit the button to jump over. Oh, you missed. Time to get hit in the face with a pipe. That sucks. And the game has a way of kind of saving at certain zones too, where you don't think it will. So if you miss it and try to like do like I did, which was like reset the game immediately and go back, it's like, nope, you start right back after getting hit in the face with a pipe. You're stuck here. Though with that so you said,
your decisions matter in this, basically. You can't just save scum.
Oh, I didn't say that, because when I'm determined, I'm determined. Because this isn't really a bad thing on the game's part. I actually appreciate that it did this. If you are as tenacious as I am, though, mainly when I reset it, it was not because of this situation. It was because you'll be a situation where, you know, you can go in two directions, right? And I'm a guy that wants to find collectibles. Like, there's actual pictures that you can find, for example, that when you find them, the game will give you a premonition of how a character could die, which is kind of meant to give you some foresight on, like, if you're in a room that looks like this, watch your ass. So I was looking for stuff like that, but you turn the wrong direction, and next thing you know, the game does a narrative bit. You're locked out of the thing the other direction. It's like, no, but what if there was an item down there? I want to go back and get it. So it wasn't even so much about the dying part so much as, like, I want all the stuff. So I'd straight up go back.
That's what multiple playthroughs are for now.
Yes, but when I'm reviewing the game, one, I don't want to replay it. I want to finish it. And two, you already know me, man. I play games once and I'm done. If I had a bad ending, I'd have stuck with that. But fortunately for me, I did get a freaking good ending in this game. But I almost didn't, because without spoiling what happens and how, one of the most important finale scenarios is primarily quick time events and their importance. So it's like, whoops, whoops, whoops. Oh, and if you screw up, people are going to drop. Thankfully, that was probably the best I'd ever done at quick time, and I succeeded across the board, but I was stressed.
And that's stressed. One of the joys about this game is that all playable characters can live or die based on how you play.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you right now, I did go back and look up some stuff that happened that would have happened if I made other choices. And yes, it is 100% possible for every member of the crew to die. So this isn't one of those games where you have like bona fide plot armor for some people. I wouldn't be surprised there's some for certain points in the game, but good luck guessing who has it and when.
Oh, now I want to play and just like get everyone killed.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I can't do that with games. I'm like the guy where it's like, there's a trophy for playing the evil route. Nah, can't do it. It's just a game. It's too real for me. Can't do it.
I'm the same, but just like once in my life, I just want to be the evil guy and just get everyone murdered.
That's what Dead by Daylight's for. You could be Jason or Freddy or whatever. And this game is about survival, baby. There's a killer on the loose.
I don't think Jason and
he has his own game. Oh, touche.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, this game, though, I mean, if it isn't clear by the fact of how I'm talking about it and how I spent my entirety of my Sunday, I came away very happy with this game, and I actually want to play some of the other ones that they did in this series, though I'd be remiss to buying another game until I actually sit down and play my ass through The Quarry, which I do have here, which is also a Supermassive Games title. But this game was a solid ride for me, and it was absolutely worth playing instead of Pokemon Scarlet for a little while. So that pretty much makes it a buy in and of itself on the panel, on the scoring of the show. But yes, I had a good time with this. I will say one thing I do need to mention. It was a bummer, but not a game killing bummer. Early in the game, we're talking maybe like the first chapter, like the third or fourth chapter out of like 20, I did have a crash. And what I mean by that would have been like, I'm like going into a situation where the game's like preparing to load the next scene. You see the white line going across the bottom, but then the game kicks you back. And it's like, okay, you got to go back and start the game again. And you're like, did I do something? What happened? No, the game just crashed. But on the positive, the game did save at the point it was loading from. So when I went back, it went right back to where I stopped. It wasn't like I had to repeat stuff. It was just the annoyance of having to boot the game back up.
Was it just one crash, or did you run into it a few times?
It happened to me twice. I was on two different chapters. So, but in the end, like I said, it wasn't enough for me to kill me on the game. I don't know what triggered, but you know, they might, if they're listening to this, they might want to hear that happened. Maybe they can pinpoint what's causing it and make it so it doesn't happen for others. But not a game killer. Still worth it.
Cool. $40 official verdict.
Totally worth it. Some people might say it's a movie game, and they might be like me, where they only get one playthrough out of a quote unquote movie. But even if they are that way, I mean, the game is longer than a lot of movies you would pay, you know, two ticket prices for in this case to get that cost. So it's absolutely worth the money.
How many VHS tapes would this come on?
I don't know. We need to ask Chris and Catherine if they're the experts on the VHS scene right now. So
what do you think? 10-hour game, how many tapes? Would that be like four tapes?
I mean, like, Sound of Music is what, like 3 hours? And that's two tapes. How long is Titanic? That was two tapes.
I was exactly thinking about Titanic.
What if it's recorded
Titanic
in an EP?
Was 4 hours.
But what if it's recorded in an EP? That means you can fit two Titanics on one tape.
Ooh. I mean, you don't do.
I think it's five tapes.
Five tapes sounds good. Next game, Soccer Story, developed by Panic Barn, published by No More Robots, released November 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. The world might as well be over. Soccer Inc. has closed down every local stadium, team, and tournament. What kind of world can survive without the beautiful game? Thankfully, a magical soccer ball has chosen you, our savior of soccer. Tim, are you the savior of soccer that we have been searching for?
No. Yeah. No, I am not. Sorry. Keep looking.
How's the game?
This might not be the savior of soccer you're looking for either. So this is a soccer adventure RPG, I assume trying to be like Golf Story, but I didn't play that game, so I'm just guessing because they put story in their name and it's sporty. but it's not Sports Story, it's Soccer Story. So yeah, the premise is that an evil soccer corporation had like staged a disaster so that they could take control of soccer from the world and control and regulate all things soccer, and soccer has been forbidden unless under their careful eye and regulation. But your little soccer loving kid that you control, be it twin boy or twin girl, your sibling is then called twin the rest of the game, which is kind of funny. It is whisked a magic soccer ball. And by magic, that works in gameplay functions where if you kick the ball away from you, you push a button and the ball comes back to you, which is a smart thing to do, because otherwise this game would be completely unbearable if you had to chase down the ball every time you kicked it across the screen somewhere. But yeah, you get this magic ball and you start getting nudged in the direction of I guess, doing outlaw mud show soccer and trying to get revive some soccer life in your little corner of the world away from this corporation's watchful eye until, of course, you're in their watchful eye. But so what you do is the game has a pretty nice look to it. It's like pixel 2D characters with like 3D embellishments on the world, like a wall will be kind of polygonal. So it's a little combo of, I don't know, ancient graphical styles, not ancient, but it's mishmashing things up. And it looks cool. I think it has a good effect to it, even though sometimes I can get a little lost behind buildings. There are moments where I would just kind of get stuck between things somehow, which is interesting, but for the most part that was fine and the game looks good. It has a charming writing style just overall, with the way characters interact, the dialogue, kind of the flippant way they herd you from goal to goal in this game, kind of tiptoeing on the border of being a bit too much, like a little bit too much of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, in that, like, oh, you have to go do this thing because it's a video game sort of deal, and we need to give you video gamey sort of things to do. But at least in terms of the writing, that's not so bad. So you go out with your soccer ball, and you are given quests to accomplish, which... nothing is too like strenuous or crazy. It's a lot of going around and collecting a certain number of objects or talking to a certain number of people. There are more soccer related ones where you have to like kick balls to hit a target or dribble around like an area in, you know, it's like basically a time trial type deal. But a lot of going around, just running around and looking for things. And as you go, you'll find money. Money can be eventually used to buy tokens, which will upgrade your characters on your team to give them better speed and power and ball control and stuff like that, which you'll need for when the game builds up to its actual moments where you play a game of 5-on-5 soccer, including the goalies. So you think that, you know, this is like the star of Soccer Story. So you'd hope it would be the best part of the game, but it's not. It's very simplistic, just 4-on-4 soccer. Like, okay, you can pass the ball, you can shoot the ball. I didn't really feel like I had a lot of control over like aiming shots and passes, and like sometimes it would flip control of my character to another person on my team that I just did not expect. But you know, it's kind of manageable for just, you know, just like a fun, like simplistic game. If it weren't such a pain in the ass to actually win these goddamn games, the first real match they put you up against is against the local toddlers football club. So, you know, you're playing against toddlers. You expect it to be easy, but these little motherfuckers are like shooting in shots from halfway across the field. And my panda bear goalie is just struggling as these toddlers are just blasting in shots like this is freaking Shaolin Soccer, which is a great movie.
Fantastic movie.
Oh, it's so good. And meanwhile, I'm struggling just to like a chip in like a shot from the side, or, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I need to, there's like a turbo, limited turbo meter, which builds up as you level up your character. I'm like trying to, okay, well, I need to run ahead of the defender. I need to try to get a good cross in, get, you know, the ball in, and then try to set up good shots. And it's just like, it's just not going in. It's bouncing off the crossbar. Their goalie is smothering everything. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go in and I'm going to lower the difficulty down. And I still had a tough time beating toddlers.
Jeez.
and it's just tough because sometimes they'll just hit the ball and you don't really have control over the goalie and it just goes in. And you're just like, okay, there is, and this isn't me like dovetailing review, it's just a good time to bring it up. Outside of like the story mode, you can just set up a soccer match between the teams that are in the game that show up in the story, which there's some fun, weird stuff that shows up along the way, but you can just set up matches and play them, which I did some of just to see. It's like, okay, well, if I'm using like higher powered characters, like this has to get like better or feel better, right? It's just bad now because my characters are underleveled, but you know, even playing with like fully powered teams and even after like progressing the game more, it's just like, man, no, this doesn't really change too much. It stays pretty simple. The, you know, playing through the story, it tickles a pleasant itch, at least early on, but it becomes tedious as you start seeing kind of the same quest types, that, you know, aren't super out there creative to begin with, just starting to like repeat. It gatekeeps things in ways where it's just like, okay, well, you can't walk on sand until you get shoes that let you walk on sand. So it's like, okay, well, I can't go on the beach area until I do this, or then I can't go on this area until I can do that. So there's a progression to it that you have to follow before you can move onward in the game. But it just becomes a slog, and like the actual, like it's definitely novel interacting with the world through soccer ball. And kicking around and hitting targets and stuff like that. That stuff is novel and interesting, you know, at least to start. But then, you know, having to get through the actual soccer matches is just like, oh, woof. This is a struggle sometimes. I'm getting whooped by toddlers. And just everybody I come across, like old geriatric people, you know, ghosts. Who knows what, or just, you know, until I can just manage to get the magic together to score some goals and overcome. There was something else in my head, but it's gone now. Don't know where it went. I was surprised how long it took.
Game is?
Do I know where it is?
Yeah.
Is it on Game Pass?
Yes, it is.
Well, that makes it easy for someone to try it out and then think of other things to do with their money. But I did run into, I knew there was a game. I was trying to think what the technical problems were I had with this game. Like, I had a moment where it just like glitched and wouldn't advance me. It was, I think, after one of several times that I lost to the toddlers. And because then it's supposed to just like kick you back to basically like the local football manager's office, and then you talk to him and he's just like, wow, those toddlers are pretty good, right? Well, try again. And you just keep playing them, and it just like glitched and wouldn't go anywhere, and I had to quit out and like reload the game. That was a minor thing. It's just like the more the problem is just like, for all its charm with its graphics and its writing, it just actually playing it wears unfortunately thin very quickly, and the soccer game that they have going on is not serviceable enough to even be like, well, I'll just play, you know, the, it's just fun with the quick little thing with a quick match. It's like, no, that's not even, I don't know. It's unfortunate. It's got some cool ideas, but I think maybe the playing of the game of the soccer needed more to sink teeth into, to really, and some more variety of the missions to really make the game something good, yeah. You know?
Well, as it stands, it's $20. It is also on Game Pass. What are your thoughts?
Well, try it on Game Pass. I would not recommend just blindly plunking down $20 on it without having tried it first. But hey, if you try it and you love it, who am I to judge you? But for me, I can't say that it's going to be worth, I don't think it's going to end up being worth the money to a lot of people.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. All right.
I'm going to have to give this one a go. I don't know. I have it downloaded. Yeah, it looks cute. Sure,
try it. But yeah. I think like maybe like really honestly, like playing it up through like the first couple matches or like the first like local tournament, like you've probably, you probably seen enough of the game. You probably like have gotten your fill at that point.
And that's the beauty of Game Pass. You get to try stuff you normally wouldn't. Oh,
yeah.
All right, well, Tim, that is it for you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I wish you good night. Next week, I got some, hopefully some bangers to talk about.
Hope so. I always hope
you already know what the titles are, at least.
Well, one is Front Mission. And the other is sort of something. I actually haven't started playing that one yet. I've been stuttering them so I don't overwhelm myself. But that's, I'm the one about
you wanted, Pernell, Sword of the Vagrant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so play a bit more Front Mission, and then I'm going to switch over to that one for the weekend. And, yeah, find out how those are next week.
Same SML time. Yeah.
Now I need to go find a place to put this tiger stripe jumpsuit that came in the mail today. All right. I'll see y'all later.
No one knows what that jumpsuit is about except me, and I'm so happy about it.
I want to know about this tiger stripe jumpsuit.
There's a wrestler named Brandon Cutler who wears a blue to yellow tiger stripe jumpsuit, and we're all going to cosplay as him at MAGFest.
Oh, sweet merciful crap. Yeah. That'll be fun.
So we all bought terrible jumpsuits. You could check my Twitter. I tweeted it out.
Jumpsuits. Are we going to MAGFest?
Or have we not decided yet?
I don't think so.
But... is it possible to not decide yet? Because you have to plan for all that, right? Hotel rooms and all, you kind of have to have that already. But then again, I guess you can like do like I might do, like you or not. I don't know what I'm doing, but like typically you can also like get like a place like an Airbnb or something. But I don't know if you're trying to get a room at the harbor.
There's ways to do things.
We have like friends in the area and stuff, so it's a little easier for us.
Oh, that definitely makes it a lot better. Yeah, because dealing with the harbor and all of this bull crap, get it.
Well, if you make it, you could join the SML panel.
Also, I don't do any of the planning. It's all Chris, so it's very easy for me.
She's got the means and the motive.
Oh, man. All right, who wants to review next?
I don't know.
You guys decide.
Oh, it's volunteer.
Yeah.
Well, I can do my second one now. That way I can get it out of the way.
I mean, you have three of them.
Three total.
Yeah, you have two more to do.
Yeah, so I get my next one out of the way.
Chris has two. Catherine has one. Aki has one.
Yeah, I get a huge gap after this one, so knock it out. Let's do it.
So you want to go next?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get this done.
All right, next up is Do Not Open, developed by Nox Noctis Studio, published by Perp Games. Released November 25th on PS5 and PC for $24.99. Coming in 2023 to PSVR 2 and PS4. Escape the manor whilst dealing with a mysterious paranormal threat stalking you. The pressure is intense as a clock ticks down to zero. The clock stops. Hurry, solve, hide, or die. For now, which option did you choose?
I died. Died.
Cool. What's next?
That's it. That's the game. You go. God, actually, the review would be better if that was the end of it. But nope, I'm going to talk about the game, too. So, Do Not Open is a game about a man who has a wife and a child. He gets a phone call about an aunt who takes her own life. The game does give you a warning about this, at least, so if you're not comfortable with that dialogue, you don't have to hear it. And then, like, the screen, he gets a phone call from her, screen goes to black. Next thing, he's in the house. I guess, the house. And he's there by himself without his wife and daughter, and he's wondering where they are. And you are tasked with solving a puzzle to get out of the room you find yourself locked in. It is a basement. The puzzle involves you looking at various notes while walking around the basement, and using some of the elements of this room to deduce a puzzle, resolve it, and unlock a door to get out. Except, just before you get out of the basement, something happens, something comes, and you have to hide. The game at this point teaches you how to hide, being that you have to run and find a closet and get inside of it. And then, when you do, you get an inkling of the monster that is stalking you throughout this house. And then the monster leaves. And then you are free to leave the basement and enter the house proper. It is at this point that you are in a huge foyer. You pick up a crowbar, which you can use to kind of remove some plywood. And then like that may be blocking certain doors and pathways. And then you enter a room. This room leads to a puzzle room. In which case, this is where the problems begin to appear.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so the idea behind this game, as they tell you, is a procedurally generated survival horror game. I'd say remove the survival part because that usually involves resource management and the like. This is a soul horror. With the idea being that when you each of the puzzle rooms are procedurally generated, and that each adventure will be different.
Oh, man. I'm reading the store page. It says each new game will have a different house layout. Key objects will be in different locations. And over 2,193,360 different combinations. Each playthrough will be a completely different experience from beginning to end.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, until they fix it, that's a lie. Ooh. Because here's the deal. So I opened the door and I walked inside, and the room they put me in appeared to be what would be a dining room slash kitchen with some adjoining hallways. Now, as I walked in, I was tasked with opening a lot of cabinets to find a very few things. Sometimes you'd find documents, you know, typical horror game exposition documentation. Other times I would find knives. Every once in a while I'd find a knife. You get into the dining room. This is kind of giving one of the puzzles away, but I kind of have to do it for this purpose. I go into the dining room, and there is a cutting board or a knife holding tray that you can lay all the knives on top of. Then on the table, there's a book that displays what knife cuts what ingredient. And then across the room, there's another book that gives you an order of which you need to cut, you know, ingredients to resolve whatever. At the same time, there's another puzzle in this room that involves a calendar and a 3x3 grid, which I originally assumed was going to be some sort of math-related thing. And I started to try to deduce it. Did find a book eventually that kind of talks about what it is, but it's in very small text and you can't zoom in. Oh. So I couldn't even read the finer elements of the book that I needed to figure out what they wanted me to do to solve the puzzle. I just figured it would involve multiplication and addition. Now, you know me, Joe. I am a very determined guy. If I felt like I was going to sit there and puzzle this out, I would have done it. But here's the rub. You have a watch on your arm. It starts at 10 minutes when you get in the room. After 10 minutes goes by, you start to hear a rat-a-tat-tat, knockety-tockety. And when that goes by for a few seconds, the monster bursts into the area that you're in. And you need to be hidden, because if the monster sees you, he runs faster than you. If it sees you and then you try to hide, it always knows where you go, and it will rip you out. And it kills you in one hit.
Yay!
I tried to hide, thinking just like in the basement, the monster would eventually go away. It doesn't. The monster stays forever. So you literally have 10 minutes to solve the puzzles, both puzzles of the room, get the key, and escape the room all before the monster gets you. If the monster gets you, you're kicked back out into the foyer and you have to do it again. Now here's where it gets double funny, and then it gets triple funny too. So I was like, okay, I got killed. I'll go back and try this again. Let's see if I can solve it this time. I walk into the room. It's the same layout, except the knives are in completely different cabinets, because that's apparently the idea of the randomizing. I got to open all the same cabinets, but the knives are in different places. But that doesn't matter, because I still need all of the knives. So it's just an extra way to waste my time. When you go to the books are in the same places, but the ingredients are in a different order. And also the order of which you use the ingredients is in a different order, so you have to pretty much figure that out again, too. And of course, the math problem thing is also different. I died multiple times, getting more and more frustrated each time, because again, this isn't different enough to make me feel good about getting a new experience after each death. And every time you die, there's a little note at the bottom that will say something like, it's not that failure in like basically it's akin to like saying like failure isn't the end. Like there's value in dying. Like you learn something, but you can't learn anything because everything gets shuffled and they change it. So all you know is search for stuff. So you might be thinking, well, Parnell, if you're a little frustrated, maybe you should try a different room, you know, season yourself, get a more acclimated with a different place, and then come back when you're rejuvenated or whatever. Good idea. I would have thought that too. Except here's where it gets funny again. You're in the foyer. You think, I'm going to a different room. So you go down the hall, you remove some plywood, you go to a different door, you open it up, and it puts you in the same room you left three doors down the hall. It's the same room. You can't escape it. You have to solve the room because for some reason, I guess in the algorithm or whatever they wrote for the game, it doesn't give you rooms for each door. It gives you rooms in the order you find them, which means no matter what door you open in the house, it's the room you last attempted to solve. you can't break the sequence once you're in it. And if you're already being frustrated because an undodgeable demon is chasing you around the house, you just got to suffer for it. It drove me freaking crazy until I eventually just said, I can't do this anymore. I'm kind of done. Which makes me sad because in some respects, the idea is cool. I like the idea of an adventure room structure. It would be nice if there were ways to, I don't know, even if it came down to like buying yourself some time to avoid the monster. Like if you could have an item that, I don't know, that's like a decoy maybe if you needed it, or I don't know, give me the ability to in some way get away from this thing if I need to run. Because like I said, once it sees you, it's faster than you. And if you try to hide while it's chasing you, it always knows where you go. You can't get away once it sees you. But also, since you can't leave the room, once it doesn't leave the room, good luck sitting there puzzling out a solution to a problem when you're in the closet the whole time, hoping it never comes back. So I know there are probably some people listening to me talk about this right now, and they might be saying two things. One, you're not a real gamer. A real gamer could solve this. To that person, you try it yourself, and also, fuck you. The other person might be saying, well, you know, I like the idea of what he's describing nonetheless. This is a challenge I'm looking forward to trying. And to you, I say, go for it, but also good luck, because it's rough. But with me saying that, it's unfortunate that I have to come away from this one with the impression that, despite me thinking at least that they got the atmosphere right, because I did like the way the house looked and the rain and all that, I have to give this rather play Pokemon Scarlet than Do Not Open. there are ways they can fix this game, for sure, but as it stands, it's not $24.99 purchase and hope they fix them. It's get it fixed and then maybe revisit it and come back or something.
Yeah. Well, need an official verdict at $25.
I would give this a verdict of do not open. So do not deny.
All right, sounds good. Who wants next? We're not doing my predetermined layout of reviews. Who wants next? Like an arcade, put your quarter up.
Yeah, I can go next. I was just munching.
Cool. Next game, New Joe and Matt, Caveman Ninja, developed by Mr. Nuts Studio, published by Microids, released November 24th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $29.99. It's Xbox Series X and S and PC on December 1st. Switch, PS4, PS5 will have a physical release December 13th. Back to the past, we're landing in prehistorical time, dive back into Joe and Mac's adventures, the quirky duet ready to smash everything on their way to save their village, even dinosaurs. Chris, what is going on in New Joe and Mac?
Caveman Ninja. A caveman game with dinosaurs?
Crazy. I know.
Can't believe it. Okay, so
dinosaurs.
Yeah, I know. Oh man, dinosaurs. Dinosaurs that turned into dinosaurs. That was the best show. They should have given it a second season. Anyways. Okay, so yeah, this is a remake of Joe and Mac, which is I don't know if it's popular, but it's one of maybe Data East's more well-known caveman games, at least. yeah, so this one, I knew it because it was a Super Nintendo game, but this is different than the Super Nintendo game. It's also an NES game, and I think it was on Genesis as well. But anyways, it started as an arcade game, and that is the basis upon which this remake is built. So Joe and Mac are two cavemen, who are basically palette swaps. And, the story in this version, I say because the Super Nintendo, I think, well, we'll get to this. The story is that a bunch of cave dudes break into Joe and Mac's, village and make off with the women. They drag them out of the caves by their hair and stuff. Except for the last one who, hilariously, because the lady is big, can't drag her very well. they do retain that gag for this
womp,
one.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp. The Super Nintendo version actually didn't show this. they showed the cavemen coming towards the village, but then text comes up and says that they scared off the cave babes with their terrible breath. So it took out the imagery of, you know, the cavemen dragging the cave women by their hair. which I think is kind of more responsible because it has a couple of really dumb puns in it. I definitely recommend anybody to go and read the intro to the Super Nintendo Joe and Mac. It's worse than you remember. It's so cheesy. Anywho's. So yeah, that is absent in this version. Like I said, this is based on the arcade game. The sprites, like basically the there's an arcade version and an extend version. The arcade version is as close to a one-to-one of the arcade as possible. Joe and Mac and like the whole graphics have been redesigned into this lovely hand-painted, like really nice animation. Really good looking lines and stuff, kind of, you know, moving cartoon. Very much akin to one of the other games that they remade, which was, you know, Toki, which is that Taito game. I reviewed that years ago. I don't know. So like Toki, it's basically the same stuff happens and you know, you have the same kind of moves, but it's a little different. I dare say this is harder than the arcade game. Funny enough, okay, so I actually went on YouTube because I like, especially when the game I review is a little more expensive, I like take a little bit of time and see what other people think and you know, watch them play through it and stuff. I watched two different videos where there's one video, a gameplay video, where they can't get past the first stage, and the other, like, Let's Player took, like, 20 minutes out of a 40-minute video just to take down the first boss. And the other video just couldn't do it. It was a 20-minute video where they just repeated the first stage over and over and then ended the video.
Wow.
Here's the thing, and the game itself will not tell you this, but there's a... So Joe and Mac have a variety of weapons. They start off with a kind of like stone axe that they throw. It's got that kind of arc, like a Castlevania axe, but maybe smaller. And as they proceed, they can get different weapons, and they're all caveman themed. So you've got the wheel that you can roll over enemies. You've got a little dinosaur tooth that functions as like a knife or something. And also in the arcade version, mysteriously, you can shoot clones of yourself at the enemy as a pretty rare weapon drop. You just shoot clones at yourself that pop out of you and go and punch the enemy. It's very meta. I did not ever see that in this version, so I hope it's in there, but I doubt it is. But anyway, you can do a regular shot, but if you hold down the shoot button, then your dude does a wind-up where, you know, his arm spins around, and then that will get you a super-powered shot. You could take down the first boss in, like, three hits like that. Nobody that has reviewed or played this game seems to know that. So I got much further than the reviewers did, or nice. The Let's Players and stuff. So there's
Suck
a free
it, nerds.
Tip for you guys.
We're better.
Yeah, we're better. Come to the SML podcast for the hot tips.
We are unique.
Unique. So... let us talk about the ways in which this game is unique from the arcade version. One little criticism kind of pops up. So the arcade game, being an arcade game, is one of those where you get, because it's a side scroller and death happens often. It kind of goes by Adventure Island rules. It's that you constantly have to eat food, otherwise everything that you do kind of depletes your life, and enemies, you know. It's not like one shot kills you in this game as opposed to Adventure Island, but like you don't have that much life. So you get hit like a few times and you're dead. In the arcade version, there's a variety of checkpoints, including one right before every boss, so that, you know, as long as you keep dumping quarters in it, then you keep getting turns. The Super Nintendo version had like a thing where you had limited lives and continues, but you got to like respawn exactly where you died. Especially if it's like, you know, two player mode, because this game does have simultaneous two player co-op. This game just makes you start the entire stage over no matter what, and you still have limited continues.
Ouch.
So you get three credits of three lives each, and you just gotta, I guess, use that to get through the game. It's odd that they chose to do that, because I would think that if this is like an arcade conversion, like at least put up checkpoints if you're gonna limit lives, or make it infinite lives or infinite tries, but you know, you just keep you know, get to dump credits into there and start the stage over till you get good. It's neither of those things. So therefore, the difficulty is spiked up way more than the arcade version because you are absolutely limited in what you can do. So that's the thing. Kind of wasn't expecting that, but that's what happens. And I checked the menu, the options menu. The one option is language. You get to change the written language of the game. That's it. So
the game anyway, needs options.
Games need options. You know, at least the controller's mapped correctly. So you can actually download the original Caveman Ninja in the eShop by way of Johnny Turbo's Arcade, which is a kind of like a series of mostly Data East games that Flying Tiger Productions, aka Johnny Turbo, re-released. That version has unchangeable controls, and jump is mapped to B and shoot is mapped to A, so which I'm sure it feels more like the arcade game, but it certainly doesn't feel good on a Nintendo controller. Anywho's, so yeah, that's one thing. So like I said, the game is presented like the arcade version. So, you know, if you're familiar with Joe and Mac, aka Caveman Ninja, then like you'll know that like you basically start the first level like right at the boss. Like there's very little, like you just climb across the dinosaur and then fight it. Like that's the entirety of the level, which is funny that, you know, people couldn't beat it still. That's how short it is. So the game does offer an extend version. So the extend version appears to be, unless I'm mistaken, a unique to this game layout wherein the stages are much longer, although they do still lead to the same bosses and scenarios and stuff, but it's not like cramming a whole ton of like bad guy cavemen into one spot. It's more like they're spread out across a level that's kind of set up to give you like more individual challenges. Because, like, that's kind of the thing of the arcade game is that they crowd the screen all the time with, like, enemies that are coming at you.
Yeah.
Or pterodactyls that are bringing eggs for you to break and get new weapons and stuff. It's more chaotic. The extend version seems a little bit more kind of plot, you know, you can plot it out a little bit better. But it's still, it's doubly frustrating in the extend version because the levels are twice to three times as long. And you still have to start them all over if you die. So, you know, that's a word of warning going into this one is that it's that kind of game.
Well, there's also a game that is priced at $29.99. So what are your thoughts with this one?
Well, so I assume that this is because it's going to get a physical release like Toki did.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, if you've got a lot of Joe and Mac nostalgia, if you've beaten like the Super Nintendo game, the arcade game, you want something that's familiar but looks really, really nice, because this game does look really, really nice. Sounds good, too. Then I would say this game is for you. If you are just wanting to get into it as, like, a challenge platformer, totally go for it. Like I said, I really think the limited lives and continues that are not changeable does kind of shoot it in the foot a little bit for casuals, at which point, you know, I'd say 29 is worth it for the physical, like, you know, thing there. For digital, I would say wait for a sale. But I mean, there's enough here to like recommend it to people who want to be challenged this way. But yeah, other than that, you know, beware.
Cool. Sounds good.
There you go.
All right. Who wants next?
Nope. I was muted.
You want next, Catherine?
Yeah, I'll go.
Cool. Next game, Shadows Over Loathing, developed and published by Asymmetric, released November 11th on Steam for $22.99. Shadows Over Loathing, a slapstick figure comedy adventure RPG full of mobsters, monsters, and mysteries. Catherine, what is going on in Shadows Over Loathing?
Hey, so I should preface this with Asymmetric team. A lot of people might know them for Kingdom of Loathing, their first game ever, and that is still running a browser-based RPG that I have been playing since 2005.
Wow.
You yeah, do realize there are other games, right, that exist?
Huh?
Yeah, there's other games, I promise.
Well, like, the nice thing about Kingdom of Loathing is that it's a turn-based game. So, like, you're limited in how much time you can spend on it. Well, kind of limited, depending on how good you get at it. Or how many years you play it. so, I've been a fan of asymmetric for a very long time, to the point where, like, their main office, I don't even know if they have a main office anymore, but it was in Phoenix. And when I was little bright-eyed 19-year-old me, moved all the way to Arizona to be with my internet friends, who I had never met. No, that's not true. I'd met them once. So, like, I've been a fan of these games for a while. So, just wanted to preface it with that. I am way super biased, because I genuinely love Shadows Over Loathing as well. If you played and enjoyed West of Loathing, you will also play Shadows Over Loathing. It's the same style of gameplay. You walk using your directional keys on your keyboard, and you can click things or use keyboard commands to look at stuff. Like with any Kingdom of Loathing game, the joy comes in clicking everything.
Literally everything that you can, yeah.
And I'm also going to say, I am the West of Loathing guy you mentioned earlier, so that pleased me to hear.
to hear, real quick, I got to do this. Also pleasing to hear is Purnell's fucking yeah with Raider Biz dropping a sub for the third month in a row. Thank you so much, Raider Biz. Always love having you here. And it sounds like everyone is going to be loving Shadows Over Loathing, because I loved West of Loathing, and this sounds like it's just more of what I need.
It's perfect. So, like other Loathing games, it's very important for your joy to find joy in this game. Click everything. One of the best things that I've always loved about Loathing games is that every single thing has a description. And they are so well written, and really just, I love them so much. The descriptions always get me, like, just outright cackling. So I really enjoyed that coming into this new Loathing game. I still got that bit of nostalgia beyond the stick figures, because these stick figures move, which is not what happens in Kingdom of Loathing. But, like, the story is very different. It's a much... So we have your Kingdom of Loathing that's, like, medieval, fake medieval-ish, and then West of Loathing, Old West, and then Shadows Over Loathing is, I think, supposed to be, like, the 20s-ish? 1920s?
Yeah, one of the features on the Steam page is authentically baffling 1920s slang.
Yeah!
Even the features are hilarious.
Yes, it's beautiful. Like, I don't understand. There's one point at the very beginning of the game where you run into a couple of, like, teenagers at a diner, and they're talking to each other, and I couldn't understand a word, and neither could your character. One thing I specifically appreciated in the character creation is when you very first choose your face, it's basically hairstyles that you're picking, because it's a stick figure. But when your pronouns are first used, because they did it, they automatically assume based on, like, hair length, you have the opportunity to correct them the very first time they use your pronouns. So if you choose a long hair option, but you want to use he, him, you can correct the person and they'll move on in the game to use the correct pronouns for your character. So I just wanted to put that out there, I was so happy about that in my my computer desktop, because Max automatically saves screenshots to your desktop. Is just half of my desktop is screenshots from the game.
Find a good one and send it to me. I'll use it as the image for the episode.
Okay, I'll go through them. I did take a screenshot of some dialogue. There's one there in the diner. There's a sign on the wall that says "Try coffee, you'll like it eventually." let's see. the when you first start the game, they give you instructions, like the tutorial on how to start going is very creative. Your first on how to move using the AWSD keys is shown via a billboard, and it says AWSD Moving Company. It's how you move. And even though I'm not on camera right now, but I did just do the elbows way high up. And then as I was explaining what I was doing, I was still doing it again because I will not learn that I cannot be seen on a voice call.
I can only wonder how much gesturing Purnell does during a rant. Purnell, do you use a headset or anything, or are you just like holding it to your ear?
I hold it to my ear and I let the franticness take hold in its own right. Because trust me, there is gesturing that takes place.
So, like, one of the things that players of Kingdom of Loathing will really love as a callback is one of the first item stores that you get access to is called the Cola Wars Surplus. And this is really cool because in Kingdom of Loathing, there's like a whole time warp thing and you go into the Cola Wars. It's a lot. But it's a really nice callback to for someone like me who has been playing the Loathing games for years, and I get to see how the Loathing timeline goes on.
That's so cool. I love how they have continuity between all of their games.
Honestly, it's really it makes it a lot more fun for me to have this these little nods of continuity. Also, like when you very first after you finish one of your first missions, you go into this bar and you can talk to everybody like you're gonna do, and they have a guy playing bass, like an upright bass, and if you try to talk to him, it says this guy doesn't care about anything except the bass line.
Is that Chris?
So I just it was so like everything about this game is just joyful and funny and tongue-in-cheek. If you want to play a game where you're going to get into this serious thing, don't play Shadows Over Loathing. It's not a serious game. You will not have a good time.
About the graphics, high quality, top of the line, like,
oh yeah, Unreal like Engine. if you don't have one of those really fancy video cards, those game cards, then you're not gonna want to play this. Anything less than 60 FPS, you're really losing a lot of quality.
I think Aki could play this one, actually.
Probably. So the graphics are all stick figures, and there's very little actual movement. And because this is a lot of just moving side to side, front to back, and then clicking, you can play this on anything. It's honestly, when I very first started playing Kingdom of Loathing back in 2005, I just had dial-up, and it was a browser-based game. I think they keep that at their heart with these Loathing games, is that they are accessible to everyone, no matter what kind of device you're playing. I don't know if it's going to be on Switch like West of Loathing was, but I really hope it does, because I will buy it again if it does. I bought West of Loathing twice. I bought it digitally, and then I bought the special edition when it came out on Limited Run.
Oh, that is awesome.
Box, yeah.
Yeah, I have the box, and I still have, like, I have little bits of stuff from, like, my Kingdom of Loathing days. Honestly, like, I could talk about how fun and, like, the little bits of this game. I don't want to say too much about it, because I want people to discover it for themselves, because discovering the little things like the try coffee sign are really what make the Loathing games fun. I will say, like, talk to everybody, click everything. Your decisions matter. When you make little decisions, like what stat is going to be your main stat, for your character. If you're going to choose mysticality, moxie, or muscle, like little things like that, they do matter in your gameplay later on. And so I just like go with your heart. I usually play a muscle character, and this time I went mysticality. And I'm having fun with that.
I like on the Steam page, the screenshots they have, your currency is either 1337 or 69. In all the screenshots, those are how much meat you have.
Well, okay, I will say so in the original Kingdom of Loathing game, there is like, it's all the same kind of like tongue-in-cheek jokes, just pop culture. One of the places you can adventure eventually is the valley beyond the Orc Chasm.
That sounds really dirty.
So good.
I didn't get that joke for years because I never said it out loud.
Yeah.
And then someone asked me, oh, what are you working? Like, what area are you in right now? And I was like, oh, I'm in the valley beyond the Orc Chasm. Oh.
And then it just clicked and you're, Oh, man. Well, Shadows of Loathing is sitting at $22.99 on Steam. What are your thoughts?
Buy it twice. Buy it on the system that I know it's on Mac right now and PC. Is it on anything else?
Nope. It is only on Steam right now. Is it?
Okay. So, yeah. PC, like, buy it. If it comes out on a system that you like better, buy it on that system and play it on that system. This is a small developer. I know that they work really hard on what they put out. And it's just a heck of a lot of fun. And if you finish Shadows of Loathing and you still got a loathing itch, go play Kingdom of Loathing and West of Loathing. West of Loathing, I think, is usually $11. And that's a joke from Kingdom of Loathing because it's, did you know that the Soviet Union has 11 time zones? That's ridiculous. That's not even funny. So I'm just saying that there's a lot of humor to be found in these games. So if you're looking for just something to be fun and silly, then go for it. It's a very good time. And I'm excited to get more screenshots for my collection.
Sweet. All right. Well, that is it for you. You going to stick around until the end of the show?
I'll be here.
Cool. Moving on. Aki's turn. Gungrave Gore, developed by Iggy Mob, published by Prime Matter, released November 22nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $49.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. Yay! Gungrave Gore is a stylish third-person action shooter by South Korean studio Iggy Mob, in which you take on the role of Grave, a gunslinger of resurrection and badass anti-hero of your dreams, mowing down tons of enemies in a gory ballet of bullets. Aki, what's going on in Gungrave Gore, and is it gory?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Okay, if anyone knows who the Punisher is, as in, like, Marvel Punisher,
no,
he looks,
he looks
like a little baby bitch in comparison to Gungrave.
Oh, geez.
The amount of violence is that drastically different. Here, let me set the setting for you at the very opening scene of this game. Bad guys look over across the sea because there's this weird light that looks kind of like a comet, except for it's aiming directly at them. Oh, fuck. And then it hits the ground, and then you get to see it's a coffin. And it bounces a few times, slams into a dude crushing him, and immediately out of the coffin pops Gungrave. And he does this flip, grabs a dude's head, twists him around, breaking his neck. That dude shoots a few times, killing another dude. And then Gungrave lands. And then puts holes in a bunch of the rest of the guys.
Jeez.
And it is all in beautiful graphic detail. When that coffin hits that dude, his body goes... all over the place, and it's great.
I have never heard you so joyous talking about a game before.
That's because usually I don't get to play games that are this over-the-top violent.
I'm actually kind of scared with how happy you are right now.
I really like really bloody, gory games. They're fun. Okay, so in this, you play as Gungrave. This is the third game in a series. It's both an anime as well as a set of video games. His original name was Brandon Heat, and he worked for the mob, along with his friend Harry. Harry decided he wanted to run the mob, so he killed Brandon because Brandon was loyal to Big Boss, as they called the head honcho. And then somehow, mystic-y bullshit, Brandon is brought back as basically a zombie who needs complete blood transfusions every now and then, but because he was brought back from the dead, he is extremely strong and really durable, blah, blah, blah. And that's basically the story of the first game, and it continues on from there. In this, you are trying to get rid of a drug called Seed. It's been in every one of the games. It basically turns people into monsters. So you and your little team, I say you and your little team, you're actually more part of the team. You're not the leader, because Brandon is kind of singularly minded. He doesn't think very much. He's kind of a undead, a zombie, one might say. So he's not exactly the most inspiring speaker or the smartest individual in the room. But he is really good at shooting people in the face. So,
hey, if you have a calling,
go for it. Yeah. Fuck yeah!
Everybody has stuff that they're good at.
Yeah.
So Brandon walks around and shoots people with twin pistols that are gigantic magnums, specially made for him, as well as his coffin, which is both something he can apparently get into, because you see him do that a couple times. And also, in and of itself, is also a giant fuck-off gun. It has rockets in it. It's a giant machine gun. Also turns around and swings it, because it is on a chain, and swings it and bashes people in it. It's part sniper rifle. It's part cannon. If there's a gun, that's what that is. It doesn't matter. One of the upgrades in this game, and I think the second game, it has a laser. Just straight up a giant laser that fucks everything up. And it's fantastic. Basically, this is an arcade shooter at this point. You just walk through the level shooting absolutely fucking everything and everyone you come across. There's a lot of destroyable stuff in the environment in order to help build up a streak, basically, of hitting things. And it will eventually disappear if you don't shoot something within X amount of time. The higher your streak is, the better that part of your score is at the end of the level. There's also how quickly you beat it. There's how high of a streak you get. There's how much life you have at the end. There's what percentage of the enemies you killed. And I've hit 100% in almost all of them, because of course I did.
Jeez.
I need the massive amounts of violence in my veins. And there's something else, but I don't remember what it was, because it's not as important as killing everything. And you get rated from S to, I think, F. I've never gotten below a D, so I don't know. And that
I
gets
bet you've
you
never been below a D. Oh,
very true.
Where's Jacob when I need him? He would have loved that one.
Yeah, well, he's probably pooping. So at the end of every stage or every level, you get ranked on all these different things, and that determines how many upgrade points you get. And you can use that to upgrade how much health Brandon has, how quickly his shields recharge, his bullet damage, his beat you up with the coffin damage, it's shooting the coffin shooting damage, your demolition charge, ability, which is doing something special with the coffin. Because lots of times he doesn't actually shoot it as a weapon until you use a demolition charge. And then it does something crazy. It's just whatever one you have equipped is what it does. And there's a dozen or so of them, and you can have up to four equipped. Each one takes a different amount of charges to do. So you can upgrade all of that. You can give him new abilities to combo, so on and so forth. And it allows you to replay all the levels over and over and over and over and over again to your leisure. So you can just rack up those points and just continue the beef, Brandon, until you can walk in an area and everything pisses their pants and shoots themselves for you.
Hey.
Yeah, it's great. Guessing
you like this one.
I'm really enjoying this one. I haven't finished it yet because there are a couple problems with the game. Namely, some of the stuff that's destroyable isn't always destroyable, and it doesn't tell you which are destroyable and which aren't, which can screw up your ability. You might be like, oh, I see that. Let's shoot that when I get over here so I can keep my streak going. And then it doesn't take damage, and you're like, oh, you motherfucker. Because there are some special abilities you can only use when you have a 50. It allows you to at least a streak of 50 or higher, and allows you to shoot in every direction all at once with your pistols as you just go kind of batshit insane. Good for when enemies surround you and start wailing on you, as I've found a couple times. So that kind of sucks. There is also some missions where little explosives show up that pop out of the ground like a bouncing Betty. And the problem is that your character automatically locks on to people first, then breakable items, but it doesn't actively target the bombs when they're in the ground or even when they pop up. You can target them when there's nothing else around. You can manually target them, but there are for instance, in stage 2, every stage has a bunch of levels in it, but the very first level in stage 2, you're on a train, and you're on top of it, you have to get from where you are to an opening before it goes into a tunnel, which auto-kills you. You also have to avoid running off or getting shot off the train, where you also instantly die and have to restart that section over again. And there's all sorts of these fucking bombs all over the place, and there's a bunch of shotgun-wielding enemies and a bunch of rocket-wielding enemies, and both of those knock you backwards. And it doesn't give you very much time. And honestly, the only reason I beat it was because I got knocked off the train, but I glitched to where I managed to land on the side of the train on a walkway that doesn't actually exist, and I managed to just run past all the enemies at that point and get to the area I needed to go. If it weren't for that, I'd still be stuck on that level.
Jeez.
Because I even started a level. Originally, I just leveled up my health because I was like, I want to keep my weapons weak just so I can keep getting larger and larger kills or
combos.
Combos, yeah. Just so I can, you know, basically try and make sure I get an S rank at the end. And then I was like, okay, I can't beat this area. I've tried it like 8 times in a row, so I'm going to just start replaying levels. And I'm just going to level up the strength of my guns, and hopefully that works. And I got them up to like level 3, and I still couldn't do it. And then I got knocked off the side, and I was able to run forward. And I was like, okay, that works. Fuck this. So they could really use the ability to target the bombs when they're in the ground a little easier. Or at least target them when they've popped up, because it has a little bit of time before they explode. You can destroy them when they're in the air. It's not easy.
No.
But if it automatically targeted them, it wouldn't be as hard to do. And that would make sections like that a little easier. Because I don't know how you're supposed to get through that. I even before just today, I worked on that for like just that in section, because it was the very end of the train was where I, or of that level was where I had the biggest trouble. Because there's a section right, literally right at the end. Once you pass it, you beat that level. And I sat there for over 10 minutes playing through a like 30, 40 second long section over and over and over. Because I kept getting knocked off the train or I'd get into the tunnel and die. And, you know, that kind of kills the fun. I also don't like how they made Brandon look in this, because he kind of looks emo, very emo. And that's really weird looking, especially for a dude who's like 40 something. He shouldn't look like an emo.
That's the average age of emos right now.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe, but...
Anyway, the game's now, $50. What do you think about it? You've been going on for a while.
Yes, and I could go on longer. I know you can.
That's why I'm jumping in.
Yes, buy this game. It's fantastic. I love it. Play it, please.
Cool.
I want more.
I wonder if the character design is still done by Yasuhiro Naito.
I have no idea. You'd have to look that up.
He is the creator of Trigun, my favorite anime. And he did the design for the characters on the first Gungrave.
Well, I know they kept that for the second Gungrave game. I don't know if they kept him for this one, because a lot of the characters do look different. All the new characters look quite a bit different than what they did in prior games. Okay. However, they kept lots of the aesthetics, like Bunji, a character who keeps reoccurring in the games. He looks about the same. Gungrave looks kind of the same. They've changed his hair and made him look a lot more emo. They've elongated his face and stuff, but otherwise, like, he has the same general appearance.
I mean, everyone else looks characters do kind of look a little different. Emo sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but none of the other characters look anything like prior ones, which is kind of a shame, because I liked the older art style more, but yeah, still a good game.
I love Naito's art style. Anyway, I was just curious. Because I haven't seen credits for this game, so I don't know.
I haven't beaten it either. I'm on stage like 4.
Anyway, next game, This Way Madness Lies, developed and published by Zeboid Digital Entertainment, released November 10th on Steam for $9.99. Shakespeare and Magical Girls, what could be better? Save the worlds of Shakespeare from the forces of nightmare in this fast-paced, turn-based JRPG comedy. Pernell, what is going on in This Way Madness Lies?
So this game is, so for those who may not be in the know on it, a company goes by Zeboid Games. They've done games such as Breath of Death 7, and more notably in recent years, they've done Cosmic Star Heroine and Cthulhu Saves Christmas.
Oh yeah, I have both those games.
Yes. So in that case, you already know what you're getting out of this game, which is a honestly very well-written and succinct JRPG experience. In the case of this title, you play as a group of girls who are a part of a high school drama club called Stratford-upon-Avon High. It's an interesting name. And these girls also happen to be magical girls. And they also have the ability to transport themselves into the dimensions of Shakespearean plays to save them from eldritch horrors. It's as weird as it sounds. It's doubly interesting by the fact that the game doesn't prep you for any of it. It takes you, it's one of those games where they put you in it and you just kind of have to accept that this is the world they live in, and they just kind of run you through it. And it totally works because it's well written and hilarious in the way that they execute it. The general gameplay loop of this title is that you will experience Stegnum, you know, I guess like vignettes of the girls' lives. They'll be interacting with each other, having fun conversations. Oh, and also they know you exist and they refer to you by a variety of different names. They keep changing it as the game progresses, which I kind of like. But they talk to you and ask you for suggestions on things to do and stuff like that, which can sometimes affect how the events occur and like the dialogue that takes place in them. But however, every once in a while, a situation will occur, resulting in them having to transport their way into a Shakespearean play. And when that happens, that's pretty much how the dungeons are affected in the game. They transport in, and usually a group of the girls will be there, typically 4, typically sometimes 3, and eventually you'll be all of them, and you'll be able to choose which girls you want for your party. And then you'll explore the dungeon, fight battles, and eventually resolve the problem and come back out. Now, it's interesting because the way they do this with this game is the battle system. It's very different from a lot of, you know, turn-based RPGs that I'm used to playing in a way that I genuinely enjoy. Each character can equip up to about 7 different abilities. They each have a normal effect. And when you use it, it's gone away. Like, it fades off. And you can't use it again until you do a defend action to recharge your abilities. Now, the abilities come in a variety of different forms. Like, they're typically elemental magic attacks. They can be physical attacks. Sometimes they have various stat bumping elements or what have you. But each time you take a turn, you'll increase your hyper gauge. And when your hyper gauge maxes out, all of your abilities take on a secondary form. So, for example, one might normally do 100% damage, but if you're in hyper mode, it does 250% damage. But in other times, they get particularly weird. Like, one character that I really came to like, though at first she drove me crazy, her thing, Miranda, what she typically does is most of her abilities are stat-related, but when she goes into hyper mode, they invert. So, for example, one ability might make an enemy vulnerable, which means it takes double damage on the next attack. But if she's in hyper mode, it disarms them, which makes them do less damage from their attacks. And it becomes wild because once you start accepting the fact that characters can buff other characters' hyper stats or their abilities, and also the fact that characters have unite attacks, which is where they combine together to do a special magical girl super attack, which can only be done once per battle, per combination of girls, it starts to feel like, rather than being 4 characters that have individual strengths and weaknesses, you're kind of controlling one cohesive blob of a team. And you're kind of working around what girl's going to do next to buff the other girl so that the other girl after her can do her ability. Or being like, okay, well, if I put her to the defend to get a hyper gauge and this person buffs her hyper gauge, she can do her combo attack with this girl to get like this extra buff of damage because hyper attacks for unites do extra damage. You start to do a lot of playing around with trying to get good combinations of abilities to go off. In addition to that, as the girls level up, because that's the other thing about the whole cohesion thing, rather than level up individually, the girls level up as a team. So the entire drama club levels up together, which means even if a character dies, big whoop, everyone levels and gets experience. And also, they all heal after the battle, too, so they don't make you sit in the menu chugging items or whatever. Which, we'll talk about that in a second, too, because the items are pretty good in this game, too. You, in addition to leveling up and getting new abilities sometimes, you'll also learn new traits. You see, because the way your stats actually increase in this game is by equipping unlocked traits, which gives you various buffs across your stats. But also they'll give you different abilities that are passive based on what you use. So you might have one that, say, will take one of your attacks but turn it into a fire-based attack. So now it's like, okay, not only do I get these cool buffs, but also it augments one of my attacks, so it does a different type of damage, which is good because I can hit enemy fire weaknesses with this character now, whereas I couldn't before. It becomes pretty fun as you start to unlock more of them to decipher which ones you want to equip and win, because early on it's pretty obvious. Equip the higher ones. They're just better. Better stats, better abilities. But later on, you'll start finding yourself thinking, well, this one would be good, but it would be even better if I was combining it with this weaker, earlier ability, because they pair well together, or trait, whatever. It's a lot of fun to mess around with that. And due to the way that the game is laid out, whereas you don't have to equip gear, you don't have to shop for stuff, there's no world map to explore or whatever, you're kind of focused on engaging in the action and engaging in the narrative as a whole. And I genuinely love it for that, especially because the narrative is very well written and hilarious. Because not only do the characters have engaging and fun dialogue between themselves, but every once in a while, mostly when you're in one of the Shakespearean plays or when the girls are putting on a Shakespearean play at school, they also speak in Shakespearean English, which is pretty interesting because most people that are playing this game might be like, well, I like Shakespeare, but I suck at understanding Shakespeare, which is fine. Because anytime a Shakespearean line comes up, you can press the right button on the cross pad to get the Zeboid translation of the Shakespearean dialogue. And it's usually hilarious. Like, it might be, oh, yonder wind slide window breaks. Come see me and give me a kiss or something. And the thing might say, get your ass over here. Well, not with a vulgarity, but like, get over here and give me a kiss. I love you or something. It'll be something funny. Or it'll be like 12 words. But when you click over, it'll just be like, shut up. That's the Zed Boy translation. And they do it in such a way that it is hysterical as you play across this game. And the other part of it that I like, too, is when you're not in the Shakespearean plays, the girls are, they still have their magical girl transportations. And in this situation is when it gets particularly funny, because sometimes you'll have a scenario that's straight out of, like, Bishoujo Sailor Moon, where they'll be at, like, a store, and there's a demon stealing energy, and they just have to fight the demon, just because that's what they have to do as magical girls sometimes. So it's like, it's not even treated like a main plot point, it's just this little side thing they have to do in their day-to-day. They have to just fight villains sometimes. So, and I like when they do that, because it's usually these really funny subplots that are straight out of a Sailor Moon cartoon. And I loved Sailor Moon growing up, so it's right in my back pocket. All in all, this game, oh, the music is really good, too. I love the music. It's amazing in that I already know I like Zed Boy games, but I didn't even know it was coming out until, like, the creator was just like, hey, I got a game coming. I was like, I want in on that. And like, sure. And lo and behold, it ended up being a fantastic time. And if you find yourself thinking, well, that battle system seems a little complicated, Pernell, I don't know if I got the stomach to deal with the complications. Well, guess what? The difficulty modes range from easy to hard across four different levels. You can change it whenever you want. The game kind of encourages you to do it as you see fit. If you feel as though the game's too easy, bump it up a notch. If you feel like it's too hard or taking too much of your time, just bump it back down. They don't care. He just wants you to have... Well, Zed Boy Games just wants you to kind of experience the game in a way that is fun and engaging to you. I don't even know if there's an achievement for it, per se. And frankly, I don't care. It's just like, just do it. Just play the game. This one, this is a gem for me. This may well make it onto my top. I'm trying to compose my top games of 2022 right now, as Chris is well aware of now from the Twitter dialogues.
And, I haven't been ranking them, but I guess I should, because be prepping for that.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's one thing to be like, it's hard to one thing to be like, okay, this is my favorite game ever, and I'm going to rank 10 games. But it's nothing to just be like, I just think these 10 games are great, but yeah. I don't know which is better than what. And that, as hard as it is possible. And I do feel like this game has a shot of being in that top 10, because wow. You know me, if a game can actually make me audibly laugh while I play it, not because of a glitch, but because of something they actually intended for me to laugh at, that goes miles for me. And the ghost story segment, there's a lot of parts where it happens, but the ghost story segment in this game, when they're all around a campfire telling ghost stories to each other, I actually was laughing, and I didn't expect to laugh at that scene, but it worked. And at that point, I was like, yeah, this game is legit. This is a gem for me. This was definitely worth playing over Pokemon Scarlet. I have no time was lost playing this game. I felt like it was worth it. And I recommend it to pretty much anybody who likes JRPG structure. Doubly so if you like JRPGs but don't want to deal with all the fat that they can have porked in them sometimes.
Well, $10. What's your official verdict?
Absolutely buy this game. It is solid. This is a solid product. And if you don't like it, well, that's okay. You're allowed to. But man, I'm sorry to hear that, because you're disliking a great thing.
I may have missed it, but is the combat turn-based or real-time?
Oh, you didn't miss it. I probably should have straight up said the one or the other. It is absolutely turn-based. So it's four girls. The four girls, they each have their ability bars you choose the options from, and then the enemies jump in there here and there based on speed rather or whatever.
And what systems is this on again?
Steam.
I know it's on Steam right now. It may get a console release down the line. I know some members of their other games did get console releases, but for now it's just Steam.
No.
And on Steam, is it Mac and PC?
It looks like it's only PC, unfortunately.
I'm gonna have to commandeer Chris's computer to make this happen.
Come on, Chris, be a hero.
It is playable on Windows 7 though, so Aki could play it.
It's nice. I think if you like, well, even if you don't like magical, but especially if you like magical, I think you'll like this game.
Cool. Well, we got one. Okay, go ahead. Who was talking? Who did I cut off? I'm a dick. Oh,
that was me. I was just responding to the magical girl comment saying, I love Sailor Moon.
Oh, you're in. You'll love this game, I promise.
All right, we're good. Next game, final game. One more game to talk about. Donut Dodo, developed and published by Flynn's Arcade, released December 1st on the Switch for $4.99. Dodo is a lighthearted arcade game reminiscent of the beloved classics from the 80s that we still cherish to this very day. You play as Baker Billy Burns, who has to run, jump, and climb to outwit Donut Dodo and his bunch of clueless minions. Your goal is to collect all the donuts in each level in the best possible time. Will you top the high score table today? Come and join the fun. Chris, tell us about Donut Dodo.
Okay, well, Donut Dodo is a modern retro kind of game. This is very much a thing that's kind of based on, like, you know, I don't know what they call, like, the golden years of arcade games, whatever. you could tell just by the fact that the bad guy's name is the title. So, you know, you got clear Donkey Kong kind of vibes going on there. And, yeah, like Donkey Kong, you are tasked with saving a giant donut from a bird. Oh, wait, that's probably not the closest analog. But yeah, you are a little baker man. You appear in the, you know, you insert your coin, which is just starting the game, because you can't just jam a bunch of coins in there like you usually can on arcade ports. But yeah, you got your little baker guy, and you are in a single screen level with a dodo running across the top, guarding a gigantic donut. And you basically have to jump on platforms, climb ladders, go from one side of the screen to the other through magical warps, Pac-Man style, in order to grab all of the pink sugar-frosted donuts that are in the stage. And then once you collect all those donuts, then the big donut lights up and you can, and a ladder will appear where you can actually access it. So it's got a few different games, like, you know, influence going on there. Almost everything in here is recognizable from, like, an older arcade game, like an early 80s kind of jam. You know, you've even got the little introduction to the characters. Like, if you just let the game go into attract mode, the characters, which of course are all the enemies that are in the game, are a little cute green mouse called Sniffy. A big toilet named Stinky, and then there's a Pac-Man ghost that I actually think doesn't appear in the game. It's just called Winky. And I mean, so the stage has five levels that play in a loop, again, kind of like Donkey Kong. And in order to choose other difficulty settings apart from easy / medium, you have to go through two loops of the previous difficulty. So lots to do here, and especially given the fact that the easy game is not easy. This is very much fashioned after an old-ass arcade game, so, like, it gets tough. For one, you know, you got these mice running around. You also, you know, depending on the stage, you might have these flames that are coming out of these barrels. Again, reminiscent of Donkey Kong. That come after you, they can be jumped over if you can time it right. However, Stinky the toilet is taller than your character and cannot be jumped over, which makes sense. Have you ever tried to jump over a toilet? I didn't think so. If you have, we will stop this review right now because I need to hear that story. But anyways, so yeah, the toilet can actually, you know, pin you down into a corner if you're not careful, and you have to be careful because this game only gives you one credit and three lives to get through all of it. So, you know, you do get extra lives every 15,000 points. Those points are not easy to get. For instance, a sugar frosted donut gives you 25 points. If it's lit up, which they do kind of like randomly light up, then it'll give you like 150 points. So it's not easy to rack up a really great high score. I've been playing this game like the entire time we've been doing this podcast, and I have yet to break the high score. So
Ember says, I can't jump over the toilet. I'll hit the wall.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But also, even if it was coming after you in a maze, you probably couldn't clear it. I'm just saying, not doubting anybody's abilities here. I just got killed.
Depends. Are you jumping over like the lid, or are you like going all the way over the tank?
It's the whole thing. Yeah. Okay. And the cistern tends to be what gets you. But anyways, if you can get through all of these obstacles and grab the donut, then, of course, like I said, it moves on to the next stage because the dodo steals the donut every time. Like I said, it goes through levels that are themed after different games and like kind of have different vibes going on. There's actually one stage in particular that has ropes, and you actually the rope climbing is exactly like Donkey Kong Jr. So it's like you're like, oh, okay, I recognize this. And like, you know, if you have played like a lot of these kind of old arcade games, then you'll be like, oh, I get it. But the culmination of them actually does kind of make it its own thing. So it's not like just saying, you know, here's Donkey Kong, but you're a chef and this is, you know, whatever. I actually think it's really quite fun and very, very like, you know, you can just keep hitting start on it, even though, you know, like I said, three deaths and you go to the beginning, like you'll still be like, oh, okay, well, doing better this time. Like I can... The first day, I couldn't get through the first stage, and I was like, I'm just going to review this without getting through the first stage. And now I can get to the fifth stage. So, like, you know, I've actually learned and improved, like, some kind of human.
I'm proud of you.
Aw, well, thank you. The other thing to really recommend this game to people who are interested in this sort of thing is the soundtrack. The soundtrack is utterly fantastic. It's very frantic, very poppy, definitely, you know, 8-bit chiptune. Gives me a little bit of some Vert vibes. I'm not ashamed to say.
Vert vibes are always good.
Yeah, it is very much. And the soundtrack is available on Bandcamp separately as a purchase. It's $5 or more. It's by Sean Cosmic Gem Biallo. And yeah, I definitely recommend giving that soundtrack a listen because it's really, really good. But yeah, that's about it. I mean, it's like I said, it's got, it doesn't have a two-player mode, which is too bad. It does have a speedrun mode if you are able to beat medium hard mode, which, again, you have to beat easy medium mode twice in order to do that. It actually does have, like, you know, options, like real options. It has CRT filters, which is really funny because it had the CRT filter on and I didn't notice because it was on discrete. So it has, like... secret CRT mode, but you can of course turn it off, but I was pretty impressed by the fact that there was a CRT filter on my game the whole time and I didn't notice.
Is the good kind of CRT filter that we need.
Yeah,
you can't detect it.
You can get a cool bezel that explains things like the bonus items and, you know, collect donuts to win kind of like stuff with illustrations of the characters that actually kind of peek out over the edge of the screen. So it's like, it's a pretty darn illustrated bezel, but you can actually turn it off into a neutral blue or a black. So nice. If you want to get rid of the bezel, that's fine. You can also toggle the screen flash and shake and vibration if you want. Yeah, past that, like I said, it's very no nonsense. What you see is what you get, and it's quite good.
Well, it's $5. What's your verdict?
Yeah, $5 is an easy buy it. Like I said, you have to be in the mood for some, you know, single screen arcadey action. But I mean, as far as like a modern take on a classic formula, this is as good as it gets. So, you know, go jump some toilets.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. We are done. We are finished. We made it through.
Huzzah.
Kinky bananas. Huzzah!
Music. Chris, you like the whole one-ups thing. We need another one-ups. Catherine, do you like the one-ups? Do you have a favorite track?
Catherine does like the one-ups, as far as I know.
I do like the one-ups. I don't know any of the names of any of their things, though.
You know the game?
No.
The game?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about
the games that they cover.
Yeah.
Oh, do I know the games that they cover? Honestly, I don't remember. I've seen them a few times. Actually, the first time I saw them was at a convention for Kingdom of Loathing. In like 2008.
Okay, I guess if you don't mind, I can throw out a suggestion.
Sure.
Since we were talking about a game that's like Donkey Kong, they did a version of Aquatic Ambience. So why don't we do that?
Sounds good. So that is it for the show. We'll end it with some one-ups. Everyone, thank you so much for coming on, hanging out, joining us. Catherine, thank you so much for coming by. You'll have to come on again.
Thank you for letting me play a loathing game.
Absolutely. I saw how many hours you put into West, and I thought you were the perfect person to do it. So,
well. Oh, did I put a bunch of hours into West? I don't even know.
Yeah, we're like...
She was too busy loathing her time.